Today on the 21st show, stock markets are posting record highs, while unemployment is at record lows. And yet, many Americans say our strong economy does not match up with their day-to-day experiences. We'll talk about why that is and what those disparities could mean for our democracy. We'll also talk with an organization that's come up with some ideas on how to build what it calls a people-focused economy. And we want to hear from you. You can join our conversation today by calling 800-222-9455. I'm Brian Mackey, and that's all coming up on The 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media, airing on WILL in Urbana, WUIS in Springfield, WGLT in Normal, WCBU in Peoria, WNIJ in DeKalb, WVIK in the Quad Cities, and WSIU in Carbondale. But first, the news. From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and today we're dedicating our entire program to the economy. There's a lot of media focused on numbers, meant to tell a story of how our economy is doing.
There's your closing bell on Wall Street. It's Friday. It's the first day of March. Let's get a check of markets here because it looks like the rally has been continuing here today, the rally that we've been seeing.
Meanwhile, the new jobs report is out and is surprisingly strong. The Labor Department says U.S. employers added 353,000 jobs in January, while the unemployment rate stayed at 3.7%.
Good news about inflation this week. It is coming down, so much so the Federal Reserve signaled it might begin cutting interest rates next year.
But understanding how Americans think and feel about our economy requires looking at more than just stock indices and national statistics. And in an election year, that is something that politicians ignore at their peril.
Even though inflation continues to cool off, folks are still feeling the squeeze every week at the grocery store.
We have a lot more work to do. There's no question our plan of investing in America and the American people is working. It's all part of my economic vision, building an economy from the middle out, from the middle class out, and the bottom up.
And yet, many people feel like they're still struggling, and some of them, in fact, are. And those struggles can create disillusionment with our economy, and perhaps more importantly, disillusionment with our democracy.
I just feel like the underdog can't get ahead, and it's all about greed and profit.
The way the economy is going right now, you don't know where it's going to be, you know, tomorrow, next week.
In my democracy, I like to see us get rid of Republicans, Democrats, just people.
Mm-hmm.
Just stand up there and tell me what you can do. If you can do it, I don't have to care what you are.
The real people from conversations held across the country in recent months, they're part of the efforts of a commission started by the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, which provided that last clip. The Academy, incidentally, has been around since the American Revolution, and one of the things it does is try to address the challenges of our time. Last year, the Commission on Reimagining Our Economy, CORE for short, put out a report called Advancing a People-First Economy. But what does that mean, a people-first economy? What's it going to take to get there? And what's at stake for our economy? And not just our economy, but for our democracy. That is our conversation for the hour today in the latest installment of our series on building a better democracy. You can join us at 800-222-9455. How do you think the economy is doing? What do you think of the ways we collectively talk about our economy? And what would you like to see change? Again, the number is 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. With me for this conversation today is Dr. David Oxtoby. He is the president of the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, based in Chicago. He's a PhD chemist, former professor, and dean at the University of Chicago. Dr. Oxtoby, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thanks, Brian. Good to be with you.
We also have some members of the CORE group with us. Dr. Helene Gale is president of Spelman College, a historically black women's college in Atlanta. She's a physician and also served for more than half a decade as the CEO of the Chicago Community Trust, one of the largest community foundations in the country. Dr. Gale, welcome to you as well.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And Dr. Kathy Kramer. is also is one of the chairs of CORE. She's a PhD political scientist, professor in the Department of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Professor Kramer, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you so much for having us.
So, Dr. Oxtoby, I want to begin with you. This report from the commission, it starts with a letter you wrote where you talk about how many Americans are not benefiting from what, on a surface level, seems like a pretty strong economy. As you've seen it, what are the biggest systemic challenges Americans face that are leading us toward this idea of two economies?
We talk in our report about a people-first economy, that the economy is certainly at some numbers which talk about macroscopic trends, about inflation, jobs, and the stock market. But how is the economy focusing on people? How are people affected by the economy? So we're looking at typical Americans, not at the super rich. And so one of the things we see is that there are, in some ways, as you mentioned, two economies. There's the economy that's given by those numbers like the stock market, but how many Americans actually own stocks? How many go to the grocery store? What's affecting them is the prices at the grocery store. So there's different ways of thinking about the economy, and we wanted to focus on people and how they are affected by choices that we make, because the economy should be designed to help people.
We asked people about this, our listeners in particular, and David in Mount Morris sent us a text message that says, I live in a rural community, and all I've seen over the years is factories, foundries, and other blue-collar jobs dry up out here. Inflation comes and goes, wages fluctuate, but at the end of the day, I've seen zero improvement in my paycheck, taxes, etc. I'm sure the economy nationwide as a whole is doing better, but not where I live. It really doesn't matter if a Republican or a Democrat is in office. Professor Kramer, the sort of things we've heard from him, do they line up with some of the things that, you've heard from other everyday Americans?
They do, for sure. And we definitely heard similar sentiments from people in rural areas. But we also heard similar sentiments from people in urban areas. In Chicago, for example, one young community organizer talked about his neighborhood as a dream desert. It was just so devoid of opportunity, and the people in his neighborhood were feeling neglected to the extent that he called it a dream desert. So yes, your listener definitely rings true with the people that we listen, rings true with the things that we heard from the people we listen to, too.
Dr. Helene Gale, I'd like to bring you into the conversation now. This report, we've been talking about this idea of a people-first economy, and I want to dig into that phrase a little bit. So can you say more about what exactly that means to you, a people-first economy?
Well, I think, as my colleagues have said, it really is thinking about how are people feeling the economy? You know, we hear a lot about the numbers and how the economy is getting better, but if people don't feel that, and if the economy isn't really making their lives better, then we're not really focusing on what is going to appreciably have an impact on the lives of people who aren't feeling some of the good news about the economy. So a people first economy is really kind of, you know, in some ways, head and not thinking so much about the macro statistics, but really the micro aspects of the economy. How are people feeling that? And really paying more attention to what are the kinds of things that could be done to have an impact on how people are actually experiencing the economy more at the community level, the family level, and putting a greater focus on that.
Dr. Oxtoby, these when we talk about trying to figure out what's going on in our economy, how to make it better, this is often the work of university symposia and presidential councils and that sort of thing. But the commission took a different approach in terms of who you made part of the conversation. What did you do differently?
Yes, you're right. Often we ask economists and business leaders, and those are certainly appropriate people to ask about how to strengthen the economy. There's lots of groups of like that who are working to try to help. but we wanted to have a broader conversation. We included some economists and business leaders on our commission, but we also had a novelist, we had a dramatist, we had political scientists such as Kathy, we had tribal leaders, we had a judge, community organizers, we had a philosopher. In other words, we really wanted to bring the conversation to a much broader approach to how do we think about the economy, what are the basic principles, how do we think about building trust in this country, and the connections which you mentioned earlier to democracy. So this was a much broader group than the typical commission, which looks at economic questions.
Professor Kramer, what did the actual work and the research of going about this, what did that actually look like?
Well, there are a variety of components. We mined existing literature, talked to many experts, use the wisdom of the very diverse commission. And we also tried to mine the wisdom of the American people. So we did listening sessions in many corners of the country in which we pulled together small groups of people to have conversations about their concerns and their hopes and what they perceived that people didn't understand about their lives. And so we talked to people who were facing economic challenges, but we talked to a wide range of people. So young people who are just starting out in their careers. So community college people, university students, some low-wage workers in service jobs, educators, indigenous community members, some formerly incarcerated people. I could go on and on, a wide range of people. That was a huge part of our fact finding. We thought it was really important for us to, for one, to get outside of our own bubbles and to listen to people whose experience with the economy might be very different than our own. But just most importantly, to really take the time to listen to folks and try to understand from their perspective what they were feeling and experiencing in the economy.
So, Dr. Gale, you have all these different voices, these different viewpoints. How do you bring them together in a way that's cohesive and also make sure that people aren't being left out? How did the commission go about that?
Well, I think we tried across the broad range of people who were part of this and very much rooted in the listening sessions and what we were hearing from people themselves, to try to put together some frameworks that we felt we could all agree on. Now, clearly there was not total agreement about everything, but we wanted to make sure that we were getting broad consensus on some of the ways in which we could really think about this people-first economy, looking at some values, some core values around security, democracy, opportunity, and mobility, and using those as ways of organizing our thinking so that we could drive as much consensus as possible. And I think we largely achieved that. We wanted to make sure that, you know, in trying to get broad consensus, we were not ignoring the differences or driving to consensus at the cost of having bold, new, and imaginative ideas. But as always, you know, those things are those can be difficult balances to strike. But I think we did a pretty good job because people were so focused on the importance of the overall mission and the overall goals of this report and how it could make a big difference.
Dr. Gale, I wonder if you can give an example. Consensus is such an interesting word these days. It's not something we hear a lot about when we're talking about public policy issues in America. I don't know if there's maybe an example you pick, and we'll dive into some of the recommendations of the report later on, but of just, you know, the ways that you worked to achieve consensus where maybe that's not something that people would expect.
Well, you know, I think, first of all, we tried to establish a sense of trust and the ability to raise difficult issues and, you know, make sure that people were willing to be open and honest in where there were differences. You know, again, I think because this issue is such a critical issue right now, this moment in our history, we're just coming out of COVID and all of the economic impacts of that. I think there was a real desire on the part of people in the commission to put a put beside differences and really move towards building strong recommendations that could make a difference. I mean, there were difficult issues. I mean, there's obviously broad differences around issues, for instance, around labor and where does labor fit into it, or how far should one go to provide support to people who are unemployed. You know, so we wrestled with some of these difficult issues where one could be very polarized. But again, I think because we put mission first, we were able to come to consensus around a wide range of issues. And again, and we started from points of agreement, not points of differences, and work back from that. And I think as a result of that, we established a kind of trust that worked throughout the commission.
We need to take a break on the program. When we come back, we're going to hear more from Dr. Helene Gale, president of Spelman College, former CEO of the Chicago Community Trust, David Oxtoby, president of the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, and Kathy Kramer, one of the chairs of the Commission on Reimagining Our Economy, and a professor in the Department of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. All today, we are talking about how we can create a people-focused economy. That is the work of this group, the Commission on Reimagining Our Economy. And we want to invite you to join us today at 800-222-9455. We've already heard from some listeners in our texting group. Peter in Rockford says gas prices and housing costs are enough to sour many people on the current economy. Try to find affordable homes or even apartments in Illinois and you will be shocked. Ed in Champaign wrote, unemployment is at record lows. The stock market is at record highs. Inflation is leveling off. The economy is booming. What's needed is to pass this wealth onto the working Americans who create it. Demand higher wages for workers and close tax loopholes for billionaires. We're going to be talking about some of the specific recommendations of this group later in the hour. Again, if you want to join us, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. More on a people-focused economy when we return. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us. You're listening to The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about a recent report from a group called the Commission on Reimagining Our Economy. It's called Advancing a People-First Economy. This group is the work of the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, and joining us to talk about this are Dr. David Oxtoby, who's president of the American Academy, also Dr. Helene Gale, who is president of Spelman College, physician and formerly CEO of the Chicago Community Trust, and Dr. Kathy Kramer, who is one of the chairs of this core group. She's a political scientist and a professor in the Department of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. 800-222-9455 is the number to join our conversation today. 800-222-9455. Professor Kramer, we talked before about how people feel about the economy. There's been a lot of media attention to this, the idea that maybe we're in a vibes session, or is that it's, you know, people's unrest about the economy. Maybe it has a political dimension to it. There's somebody sent us a report that suggested that people's views on the economy match the part, whether they're presidential preference, their preferred presidential person is in office. You know, but there are strong indicators out there, right? You look, it's not just high stock prices, but unemployment has been below 4% for a couple of years now. Can you put in broader context this sort of pessimism that, that people are feeling and expressing? How much of that is really rooted in reality? Is it partisanship? You know, or are there real problems if we dig deeper into what we're looking at there?
Well, it definitely has something to do with partisanship. As you say, it's pretty clear that the party toward which a person leans does color their views of the economy. So if they lean toward the party that has the incumbency in the presidency, then they're likely to think it's more positive. But as you say, and as your listeners texted just shortly before your break, I mean, the problem is bigger than that. People are feeling like the economy is not working for them. And sometimes those feelings are important, right? And sometimes you might just say they're just feelings, but there is some reality to what they're reflecting. So people are having kind of everyday experiences in which they are picking up a message that whomever the economy was built for, it's not them. that it seems to many people that it's the economy is rigged. It's rigged against them, and they may just be doing their best to get ahead, but they're feeling like that's not enough. And I'll give you one example of a woman in Chicago who said, you know, I guess she introduced herself by saying, you know, you can call me part of that growing society where we're just trying to figure things out. We're just trying to make things work. But, you know, at the end of the day, she said, it feels like the economy doesn't value us. It doesn't value us, and the government doesn't value us. And so, you know, we don't feel great about it. We feel left out. We feel left behind.
Dr. Oxtoby, in your introduction to the report, you wrote, "A healthy economy requires a healthy democracy, and a healthy democracy requires a healthy economy." So as we just heard, as more people say they're feeling left behind, how are those two things intertwined?
Yes, democracy and the economy are deeply connected to each other. First of all, I mean, in one very practical sense, if someone's working two jobs, they don't have time to volunteer in a civic space, to get involved in an election, to be involved in strengthening democracy. They're just too busy just working. So that's one very direct connection. But the other connection is what Kathy was just speaking about, namely the mistrust. If you think things are rigged against you, people say, why should I bother to vote? Whoever gets elected, things are not going to work. And so it discourages people from getting involved in democracy. We need a vital democracy where people feel that they have a voice and they make a difference. If people feel that they are being exploited and don't have authority and power to change things, they tend to back off and drop out of the democracy. And that's a really serious danger.
Dr. Gale, I wonder how you've seen that play out, especially among people who have historically, or I guess even presently, been disenfranchised, both in our democracy and in our economy.
Yeah, well, it's an important point. And, you know, as we looked to do our report and think about what does it mean to reimagine the economy and put people first, you know, we also recognize that if we wanted people to have trust and belief in the kinds of things that we're talking about, it does mean admitting past wrongs and thinking about how to make people feel less disenfranchised based on, you know, their own experiences with the economy and with our democracy. So we felt it was particularly important for groups, people of color, other groups that have been marginalized, disenfranchised, rural communities that often feel like everything is stacked against them and is more in favor of urban populations. All of those, you know, really looking at how do we develop in our recommendations and in our discussions, how do we make sure that we're thinking about ways that re-engage people because they can start having faith in their economy and also faith in their democracy and feel like they are a part of it, that they're being listened to, and that their needs and their concerns are really being addressed. And that particularly, as you mentioned, for people who have a earn distrust of a society and a system that has let them down time and time again.
Let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show, and we are talking about the idea of a people-focused economy. Our guests are Dr. Helene Gayle, president of Spelman College, David Oxtoby, president of the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, and Kathy Kramer, who is one of the chairs of this group, the Commission on Reimagining Our Economy, also a professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. Dr. Oxtoby, I want to turn now to some of the ideas that are proposed in this report. But I guess before we get to that, big picture, there's this idea that comes up in the introduction. I'll quote. It says, "In our conversations around the country, the Americans we spoke with did not think in terms of any silver bullet solution that would address all their challenges. They alerted us to a wide range of challenges requiring an even wider range of solutions." And the point the report goes on to make is this is not a new concept in terms of systemic change in American history. Talk about how that has taken shape over time.
I think there have been periods in our history where we have addressed significant issues. I mean, let's start with healthcare. When you think about the introduction of not universal, but much broader healthcare coverage under the Obama administration, we saw directly significant impacts on those states that were able to adopt healthcare. So that's one example. But you can go way back in our history to Medicare. And of course, the introduction of Medicare many years ago gave rise to people feeling a bit more secure about their futures, and it therefore let them explore opportunities more. So this combination of security so that you don't have sudden unexpected expenses that you can't meet gives you the opportunity to take new jobs, to advance in your career because you're able to, you have that underlying security that lets you look for more opportunity. And that's the American way. And it's been fostered different periods of our history more successfully and in other periods somewhat less successfully.
All right. There are three overarching themes to the proposals in this report. We could probably spend an hour on each of them, but since we don't have that sort of time, maybe we can start big picture and drill down a little bit as time allows. And Dr. Gayle, I'll begin with you. The first big point that comes up is this idea of economic security, right? It's commonly accepted that, you know, a lot of Americans are one car breakdown or health scare away from pretty significant financial distress. What ideas come up in the report when we talk about improving conditions for something like that?
Well, I think, you know, first of all, you know, when we talk about security, really looking at people's ability to withstand economic instability and also to have some degree of resiliency so that if they do have some times where they have economic instability and security, that they're able to withstand that. A big part of that is the ability to have some of the safety nets that we know make such a big difference, and that we saw during the COVID pandemic, how having some reinforced safety net really made a huge difference in people's ability to have more security. So ways in which we can redesign our safety nets to ensure greater stability, things like reducing the cliff effect, which is a huge issue for so many families who get safety net supports, but as they start to increase their economic incomes, you know, they oftentimes fall into these cliffs where they have huge drops in their safety net benefits at a time when they're just trying to regain some economic security. So really looking at the things that will give people greater security, give them greater resiliency, and not put them in these double binds where the better they do economically, the more they're likely to have sudden falls for the things that got them to the place where they could make that progress to begin with.
All right, that's the first big theme. The second theme is...
And could I just add on that? Yeah. You know, another thing that we heard so much and so often was the importance of reforming child care along with health care. But I think it couldn't be stressed enough how important being able to have a different kind of support for working families and their children, and that came up time and time again, how families are penalized because of our lack of a really consistent child care policy in this country.
And we can drill down on that a little bit later. But Professor Kramer, the second theme that comes up is the idea of opportunity and mobility. And I guess that's even related to something like having adequate child care, right? But more broadly speaking, you hear this idea that the American dream, as we've conceived of it, is dead. What is keeping people from getting ahead as you and the commissioners see it?
Well, there are a variety of things that we focused in on. And one big category is just the many different barriers that are currently in place that really prevent people from participating in the labor market. So some of the things that we're suggesting are to reform the credentials or the occupational licensing that's needed for many jobs. So, for example, I recall one young man in Chicago talking about how he was working in a job in which his familiarity with the community was really valuable and really necessary for doing the job well. But the job or other people working in the job had college degrees, and that was valued more in this workplace than his community-based knowledge, which was actually very useful and important for the job. And just that's just one example of how sometimes people perceive that the requirements for a job don't quite match up with the kind of expertise that's actually necessary. So that was one set of things. And there's a variety of other barriers that are in place, like things like preventing people from transferring credentials that they've earned overseas into the workplaces here in the United States. But there are other things that are preventing opportunity mobility too. I mean, one thing that I would say personally, I'm really proud that we included this in the report, was to draw attention to the way in which Black World War II veterans were denied benefits under the 1944 GI Bill. So these benefits were allocated by state. And so many folks in the South did not actually have an opportunity to obtain a college education after serving in World War II, like many of their white counterparts. And as we all know, a college education is a stepping stone to building wealth. So not only did they lose out on the opportunity to build wealth, but their descendants did as well. So we would like to see those benefits extended to veterans and their Black World War II veterans and their descendants, because that lack of ability to build wealth really inhibits people to pursue opportunity and mobility. And I'd like to add just one other thing, that mm-hmm. you're right, that the values of opportunity and mobility are very closely tied to security. And one way in which we all lose out from this lack of opportunity is when people don't feel economically secure. They don't pursue other jobs, perhaps, as David pointed out. And they also don't feel like they have the ability to be entrepreneurs. They don't feel like they have the opportunity to take some risks and be creative and start a new job that then might actually benefit additional people, right? So the lack of security really inhibits mobility on the individual level, but also it harms all of us in the end.
All right, we are going to take another break. And when we return, we will continue our conversation on a people-focused economy. My guests today are Dr. Kathy Kramer, one of the co-chairs of this group, the Commission on Reimagining Our Economy, and a professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison in political science. Dr. Helene Gale, president of Spelman College, former CEO of the Chicago Community Trust and a member of the commission. And Dr. David Oxtoby, president of the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, which organized this commission. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation today. 800-222-9455. More to come after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about a report that came out recently trying to guide us toward a people-first economy. It's called Advancing a People-First Economy. This is a project of the American Academy of Arts and Sciences. The report is from a group called the Commission on Reimagining Our Economy, where Dr. Kathy Kramer is one of the co-chairs. She's a political scientist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. One of the members of that group is Dr. Helene Gale, who's the president of Spelman College and former CEO of the Chicago Community Trust, and Dr. David Oxtoby, president of the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, based in Chicago. He's a PhD chemist and former professor and dean at the University of Chicago. 800-222-9455 is the number to join us today. 800-222-9455. We got an email from Jim in Champaign sharing some of his writing on this subject. One of the biggest takeaways from that is, I'll just read an excerpt here. He says, government can save the day. It can break the logjam if only we give it a sporting chance. Blaming government is not the solution to our problem. Rather, more and more, blaming government is the problem. And it's time for true leaders to stand up to anyone who would have it any other way. And Dr. Oxtoby, I think that brings us to the third pillar of this project, which is democracy. And I want to spend as much time as we can on this, because we talked earlier about how the democracy and the economy are intertwined, especially when people are losing faith in those systems. And one of the things this report hits on is, I mean, there's not really a connectedness in our system as it stands now, right? People are made to feel that they have to succeed by themselves, the old bootstraps cliche, right? It's a failure if they have to ask for help, so to speak. How do you begin to shift that mindset?
Very good question. And let me first mention, some of your listeners may be interested in another Academy report from 2 years ago called, if you just Google Our Common Purpose, you will see a report on reimagining American democracy broadly and ways in which we might change. But here we're focused on the economic connections to strengthening democracy. And some of this is top down, so large scale changes such as revising the tax code, rewarding work, people who actually work 40, 50, 60 hours a week, rewarding them in the tax system more than people who the most wealthy. So there's some top-down changes like that. But there's also a lot of work that needs to be done from the bottom up to revitalize democracy. For example, one of our recommendations is to create a training and financing program to help working-class Americans run for political office. So change the system, get involved, as your listener from Urbana-Champaign was mentioning. We want people to do more of that. Some of that involves the media. We have a recommendation about facilitating the creation of robust local and community media, because that's the way from the ground up that democracy is going to be revitalized and strengthened.
Let's go to the phones at 800-222-9455. Linda is calling from Central Illinois on line four. Linda, thank you for calling in.
Hi, I'd like to say I'm 77. I'm a Republican. But I feel like Joe Biden was handed a COVID pandemic and a struggling economy. And it seems like this rhetoric where, well, the January 1st, 6th, great January 6th resurrection, all of this turmoil and the mistrust of government has been the rhetoric that I hear, and the mistrust even of hating your neighbors. And this is just not America to me, those kind of things. And I'm disappointed to hear them.
The mistrust. Do you feel like you hear politicians sort of encouraging people to mistrust the government or mistrust each other?
I do. And it seems like more on one side than another, but we need to get back to trusting our neighbors, like judges and people in an election. It seems like the election really emphasizes that we need to support the people who are doing the work in an election. That's really important to me. And what the lady said, Dr. Kramer, what she said about helping young families, and also what the gentleman just talked about, financial support for working people. It seems like we can do more in that area.
All right, Linda, thank you so much for calling in. I really appreciate that. Dr. Oxtoby, I don't want to begin with you. Do you want to respond to some of that? It reminds me of that little clip we played at the very beginning of the program about somebody who said, you know, I don't care if you're a Democrat or a Republican. I just want people standing up and saying they're for us. It seems like we've almost been sort of trained and conditioned to be mistrustful in some ways and to have suspicions about this. Maybe you can address that or what Linda had to say.
Sure. And actually, let me hand this to Kathy Kramer, because I'd like her to speak a little bit about one of the recommendations where she's leading a working group to explore economic connectedness. We're talking here about how people build trust by meeting people, Republicans meeting Democrats, and people of different income levels meeting each other. That's one of the recommendations that we're exploring further. And Kathy might expand a little bit on that aspect in response to the listener's question.
Sure. Well, I so appreciate Linda's points and that perception of, like, we're horrible to each other right now. Is very widespread, right? And this lack of trust that even of our neighbors is not conducive to a good economy, and certainly not conducive to a great democracy. And so the economic connectedness that David mentioned is this idea that people of different socioeconomic backgrounds have very little interaction with one another. And I don't mean we don't come across each other. We do a bit in our lives, but we don't actually know one another, don't have real relationships with people of different socioeconomic backgrounds. And so we know from work by economists that when people do have healthy interactions of people of different socioeconomic backgrounds, that it tends to be mean more upward mobility for people on the lower end of the income scale over the course of their lives. But we also think it's really important for people who are on the upper ends of the income scale to have real meaningful interaction with people who perhaps are on the lower end of the income scale, because it essentially, in a democracy, the system of governance is one in which we are making decisions that affect each other's lives. And if we don't know one another, whether we're talking across socioeconomic lines or any other kind of division, we're not likely to make decisions that take into account the full kind of humanity of each other, right? So we need to see each other as fellow human beings and to have some amount of care for each other in order for a democracy to really work. And right now, as Linda said, this the pervasive sense of lack of trust is a serious obstacle to that.
That's such an interesting point. And I think about, you know, my parents' generation. My father was a railroad man. He never went to college, but some of his good friends, one of them was a mason, but another one was a computer programmer for a big bank or insurance company or something like that. And it was a more diverse group than people generally associate with these days. Dr. Gale, do you have a perspective on what we've been talking about?
Well, I would just agree and say I think that, you know, this report and the work that we did tried to get across that point that if the issues that are most important to your life, you know, the kitchen table issues, whether you can afford food, whether you can withstand a emergency, whether or not you feel like you're able to do right by your children and provide for them, all these issues, if you start feeling that you are not cared about and you cannot live up to the basic core issues, it's hard for people to get beyond that and to have faith in a system and therefore have the broader trust in their society. And so, you know, that's why we felt like this issue of tackling the economy was so central and so core to how we start unraveling and getting to solutions for this broader issue of societal divisiveness and division that we are seeing in a world where we aren't as interconnected across different lines as perhaps before. So, you know, I think that's why we feel like this is such an important way to start building that kind of trust that will get us to a place where we can, you know, once again, see our common good and our common purpose.
We are coming to the end of our time together. I want to share one more comment from a listener. Lloyd in Danville wrote in to say, "Politics have reshaped life as we know it. Gas, food, housing purchase, or rental is out of control. The wealthy must pay and do more for others to live better lives. Coexisting is no way to live. The rich do not want forced change, but legislators must force the change." Thank you for sharing your perspective, Lloyd. Dr. Oxtoby, on whom does it fall to act on all of this? How do we make these ideas a reality?
I think it falls on all of us. This isn't just a few people. I think we need a activity across all parts of society. Certainly, we need some of the leaders to step up. We need business to recognize that their success depends not just on their stock prices, but also on the customers and the people in the country and their ability to be part of the economy. I think it's something for all of us to get involved with. I hope that our report will also foster some discussions, conversations across some of these lines. To me, that would be a critical step to break down some of the barriers that polarization has created. Because we really feel that we all need to be in this together, and we need to reach those solutions by all working together.
And Professor Kramer, last question of the conversation. What about you? How do we take these ideas and put them into action, especially at a time of so much polarization?
Well, I agree with David. I mean, thank you for having us on, because talking about them is a really important step, and just raising awareness that the economy as it currently exists is the product of decisions. And those decisions can be changed, or we can make new decisions that actually creates an economy that's focused not just on growth for growth's sake, but is focused on the well-being of people in the United States. So talking about these possible changes is a great first step. And also, voting is important. So I encourage your listeners to vote, because even if they do, if they have doubts about the system, if they wonder whether people in charge are actually looking out for them, their votes do count, and they do matter. And especially in an election year, we have to remember that voting is a really key way in which we signal to our elected officials what we want to see in this country of ours.
And could I just add, one of the things that I think is so critical for building trust for people who have been let down is having them feel like they've been heard and that they are seen. And I think one of the things we hoped through this report was that people felt that they were heard and that they were seen. And I think that's a huge step in building the kind of trust that we're all talking about.
Dr. Helene Gayle is the president of Spelman College. Professor Kathy Kramer is a political scientist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. They were both on the Commission on Reimagining Our Economy, which issued its report called Advancing a People-First Economy. And that was the work of the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, where Dr. David Oxtoby is the president. Thank you all so much for being with us to talk about this today on the 21st Show.
Our pleasure.
Thank you very
Thanks
much.
Thanks for having us.
Yes. And that is all the time we have for our show today. One programming note I do want to mention coming up in April, 1 month and 2 days from now, Southern Illinois is going to be in the path of a total eclipse. We are going to be talking about it on the program. We'd love to hear from you if you have plans to see it. If you saw it in the last one, what was that experience like? Leave us a voicemail at 217-300-2121. 217-300-2121. Coming up tomorrow on the program, a new letter sheds new light on Abraham Lincoln's final days in office. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening.